All right, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Michael Kirk. I just recently defended my dissertation at New Mexico State University. I walked across the stage in just May with a funny cap on and all of that. So now I'm on to the next best thing, which is giving my dissertation talk here at the SPD. So what I'd like to talk to you about today is a project that I've been working on with the help of my dissertation committee for about the past 4 years, and so this is going to be a gross understatement of the work that has gone into it. So please, I'll ask a lot of questions at the end. They're gonna skip over a lot of details. So I'd like to acknowledge Jason Jackowitz, who's my academic advisor, and Bala, who has been my research advisor, and really launched me on this track. And like most things, this started off with a view of a flare. So this flare, all right, so this flare is a C8.5 flare that's been captured by the ISUN telescope. So this is a ground-based telescope with a 1.1 arc second resolution, and it's a minute time cadence. This is H alpha that you're looking at. And it's a fairly typical two-ribbon flare. You can see a nice two-ribbon structure. They brighten and separate as the flare goes off. But what's interesting about this, if we, here I'll replay the video again, is that if you ignore the interesting part, right, and focus on regions outside of the main flaring region, this is a fairly large chunk of the sun at 460 megameters on the side, you notice there's actually a significant amount of dynamics happening on the flare, outside the flare itself. And that's really what got us going on this project. Bala and Alexei Petsov and a couple other people, I think, initially found these in 2005, did some analysis on them, noticed that they were sequential and not a wave propagation, and named them sequential chromospheric brightenings. It's a fairly straightforward name. And so these sequential chromospheric brightenings happen along the axis of the flare. They appear coincident or a little bit preceding the flare. They appear and disappear quickly. They're difficult to see. So if we enhance the contrast quite a bit, you can actually start to see right at the peak of the flare that there are quite a bit of compact, small compact brightenings. Well, they're hard to see, they appear and disappear quickly, and they're in the midst of embedded in a flare itself. So really what we need to do is develop some sort of technique to systematically pick apart what's flare and what's not flare. And that's where I jumped into the project. So this project started with an automated detection algorithm. And that's what you see here is the results of this algorithm. You'll see red circles, and then pretty soon you'll see green circles. And these mark locations of the flare that we pulled apart into what was ephemeral and outside the flare, and what was flare ribbon itself. And so as the flare evolves, this is the same flare as you saw before with just the circles overlaid on top. You can see the green circles appear and disappear quickly. The red ones are a little bit more persistent. And generally, it seems to capture the flare pretty well. Seems is a technical term in that we did a lot of analysis on this and actually does capture the flare quite well. But we can actually pull out some statistics out of this. And this is how we can start to go down the path of what are sequential chromospheric brightenings, SCBs, and how are they different from a flare itself. And in these four categories, they distinguish themselves. First of all, they're smaller. The minimum diameter of a smallest resolvable kernel of a flare is 6.4 megameters versus an SCB gets all the way down to 1.6. The peak intensity is quite a bit different as well. You can get up to 10 times the brightness in the flare from background intensity versus only about 2.5 times the background intensity in an SCB. The average lifetime is quite a bit different, about an order of magnitude difference there. And the other major difference is the ensemble motion. The motion of SCBs are random. They just appear, they walk around in a little random walk before they disappear again. The flare, however, is much more organized. It has a consistent direction to it, a directional consistency. That means that a flare kernel next to each other, two flare kernels that are next to each other, tend to propagate in the same direction. So if you identify one of them, it's very likely that the ones right next to it will propagate in the same direction at the same rate. So this really began to open the door to how can we separate small ephemeral brightenings to flare ribbon brightenings. So the next step is let's expand our data set. So this technique was applied to 11 different flares. Here's a nice table up here. They range in size from a no-class flare, B-class, C-class, M, X, from smallest all the way up to largest. They almost always have CMEs associated, but not always. We use multiple data sources, mostly ISUN, LASCO, GOES, and then when it was available, AIA, HMI, Gong, and RESI. And then some of them were previously studied and some of them weren't. So we have a nice broad spectrum so that we can make comparisons to what has been previously done, make sure that we're still on the right track, yet at the same time push the envelope a little bit farther and look at events that have not been identified before. So what can we say out of all of this? Well, we got a lot of interesting results about flares, but flares have been done before, they've been worked on, and so I'm gonna mostly focus on the sequential brightenings and leave the flares to another time. So the flares, or so the SCBs, if we take one of those ephemeral brightenings, pull it out of the data set, and look at its time evolution, we get an intensity versus time plot, something like this, where the black curve on the top is the ISUN data, so this is H-alpha data. The blue curve is the 1700 angstrom curve, red is 304, and green is 1600 angstrom. And we see this characteristic pattern to these things, where we have some sort of background intensity, pre-flare or pre-SCB. They spike in intensity to a maximum, and then quiet down to some other intensity. And you can see it quite clearly, the resolution or the contrast in SDO is quite a bit better than it was in the H-alpha. But what also distinguishes this type of brightening from another type of brightening that you might see is that you have a Doppler velocity associated with it. And this is what we termed as a type 1 SCB, or type 1A. The A and B are a little bit more of a subtle point, so I'll just stick to the main types. So the type 1, you have some sort of background velocity. It's propagating at some point. And then at simultaneous with the brightening, you have a negative Doppler velocity jump. In this case, it was about a kilometer and a half per second. It's impulsive. It comes back, and this, there's quite a bit of ringing afterwards, but it bounces back to some quiet level once again. So this characterizes one type. However, quite quickly, we realize that there's more than one type. So the second type, a type 2, appropriately named, is very similar in the intensity, at least, where you have some background intensity. It rises up to a peak impulsively. It decays relatively impulsively in all wavelengths. There's a bit more ringing and substructure in the 304 wavelength here. But it comes back down to a quiescent level again. However, if we just use the intensity levels alone, we'd miss significant structure underneath. And that is the velocity substructure. Again, we have some background level. There's an impulsive spike in velocity, this time at about 2 kilometer per second spike. And then it dies back down to some other level, again, with significant ringing afterwards. So this intensity-wise, this looks nearly identical to the previous one, except in velocity space, all of a sudden we have a different sort of dynamics happening. And unfortunately, there's actually a type 3 as well, where it gets even more complicated. So in the type 3, everything's thrown out the window. The type 1 and type 2 are now smashed together, where you actually see dynamics of both of them. And again, in this one with the AIA, you see so significantly more substructure because there's a better resolution and contrast. And in black, you have the H-alpha curve. In this specific case, it's fairly interesting. We have a double peaked intensity curve. In this case, 1600 peaks first, and then the other three wavelengths that we measured peak second. It's a little bizarre. But what's also interesting is the velocity space that's happening, or the velocity that's associated with this. And that's where you have an impulsive negative velocity, and then within a span of a couple minutes, it reverses course and becomes a positive velocity. So now this has some sort of a reaction where there's an initial negative velocity, it switches and comes back to a positive again, versus what's considered background intensity. So these three types of SCBs are an interesting kind of segue into what is the physical cause of these things. Can we create a unified model to pull them together? So out of all brightenings that we see in alpha flare ribbons, about half of them on average have SCBs associated. Half is a pretty generous term because some of them have very few and some of them have a lot of SCBs. It really depends on the topology of the flare, depends on how active the flare is, depends on how big the flare is. But out of all SCBs that have an associated Doppler velocities, these are positively identified SCBs, that about 42% are type 1, about 45% are type 2, and 13% are type 3. So predominantly, you just have one Doppler spike in either direction and about equaling probability. So if we create a heuristic model of this, I kind of imagine something like this as a way to picture of what's going on. So here's a schematic with a neutral line in the middle. We have a couple of flare ribbons, and we have an erupting flare at the moment. But before the flare can completely erupt, right at its initial impulsive stage, you have these quiescent coronal lines, loops, trapping in the flare. They just are in a lot of models. They're simulated like that. There's tethers in CME release models. And so there's a lot of quiescent magnetic field lines that sit on top of the flare itself. And so as the flare begins to erupt, it has to disturb these quiescent magnetic field lines. And any plasma that is trapped in them are now free or are now perturbed so that it can propagate down and impact the chromosphere here. So this is the idea of what's going on, is that it's actually a coronal phenomenon seen in the chromosphere. However, it doesn't explain what's happening on an individual level. So if we zoom all the way into one SCB and look at what's going on, we have plasma streaming in, electrons and protons. At some point, it deposits its energy in the denser chromosphere. There's an ejection of flat plasma. It's probably not energetic enough to be a complete evaporation. It's more just an ejection back up the line. And then you have some recoil. And really what causes the difference between type 1 and type 2 is where this occurs. If this occurs fairly low in the atmosphere, you see just the ejection. If it occurs fairly high in the atmosphere, you see a recoil. So to sum up, after looking at 11 distinct events and over 4,000 SCBs, we're able to come up with a few conclusions. This is a type of localized chromospheric heating and ablation due to impacting coronal plasma. These reconfiguring tethers are the root cause of the SCBs, and it's a strong indication of CME eruption and generally what's happening in the upper atmosphere raining back down to the chromosphere. So thank you very much. I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you very much. It's intriguing that you have ribbons and yet you trace these things with little round circles.
Well, the round circles are merely an indication of what we're tracking. They're actually any shape, but yeah.
But I think we don't really know what the subscale footpoints look like of flares. They could be a bunch of points. They could be ribbon-like. I mean, maybe some people know the answer to that. Any questions for this speaker?
I have a question about the dynamics of those fissures. You mentioned that these SCBs, they have a time scale about 10 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. And you said that they appear and disappear. So my question is, do they actually reappear at about the same place? Because based on your interpretation, this is what you expect, right?
Right.
Did you try to look at that?
Yeah, so the question was whether SCBs disappear and reappear again. And that's in the same place, yeah. And as far as the tracking algorithm went and all the analysis we did, they did not reappear in the same place. It was a single. It's about a 4-hour period, so it covered significantly before and after the flare. So yeah, it's purely a impulsive brightening that disappeared impulsively and then didn't come back again.
So